Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Welcome to Ignite Your Luminescent Life, Intuitive Business Mastery and SaaS with me, your host, Dr. Elena Espinel. And I am super excited to have with me a super special guest, Kristen Thompson, and I'm going to take a minute to introduce her. I am just wanting to say how excited I am to have her here in the show with us and to have her wisdom and expertise. I think it's going to be super, super fun. Kristen is, if you don't know her, she is just so, so fun. She is a straight talking, super rocking speaker and coach, and she's the founder of Speak, Serve, and Grow, and she's the creator of popular programs like Comment Any Room, Event Profit Machine, and the Rise Live event. And basically, she has used her own like five-step speak to self strategy that went from, she's going to tell a little bit of her story. I know that I'm going to be asking her and she's going to be sharing some of her story of kind of going from totally broke to like being the go-to girl with generating multiple six figures, working only 3 days a week because she is a mom and she's a rocking mom. And so she has an incredible amount of wisdom and knowledge and just pizzazz to share with our audience. And I'm super, super excited because I think that you have this very down-to-earth and fun energy and also super simple strategies to help other people like become more of who they are and get more visible. And even if they're, even if people are humble and are not really wanting to be on the spotlight. And so I think that you're amazing at doing that. So welcome.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me on your show.
I'm super excited. So one of the things that I like to do is I like people to get to know our guests first. And so I'm going to be asking you some maybe nosy questions.
Okay, good. All right. I'm pretty much an open book, so
That's great.
Can feel free to get nosy.
That's awesome. And then I'm probably going to be asking you some more techie questions of, you know,
sure.
Like how do you do what you do and that kind of thing. So one of the, you have this incredible story. And so I would love for you to share partly like what got you into speaking, like how did you get to speaking? Because I know that it wasn't, you know, I love interviewing people because it's helped me realize nobody really has a straight path. Like we think that and it's always like this, you know, but when people see you, they always like people think like, oh, like they're successful and they have their shit together and everything is good, you know? And so I really like when people kind of share a little bit of like, no, it's not straight at all. And this is
no
stuff that has happened.
Yeah, it's funny because if you asked me in my 20s, for instance, well, I went to school to be a psychologist, just to go way back. We won't spend
That's
hours
awesome.
On my story, but just to get perspective was like my trajectory, the straight path, if there was going to be one, was I was going to college, I would go to grad school, I would have a PhD in psychology, and I would have been a clinical psychologist.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
So no one would ever guess that now, but literally that was the course and path, very straight path I had set for myself. And it all really blew up in my 20s. My parents got divorced and my dad went broke and there was no money for college and all this stuff kind of exploded that just spun my life in a new direction. And so I floundered through my entire 20s and I never would have thought I'd be an entrepreneur. I would never have thought I would ever even do like sales of any kind. I mean, I'm not, that's not a put on that. It's just, that was not in my awareness at all. And but I was always into marketing, I guess, you know, unconsciously. And I worked for a bar for a while and I would do all of their marketing and come up with themes and special nights to drive, you know, people in to boost their business and stuff like that. And in my 30s, I landed in advertising sales. And that was really just a, like, I need to find a career. And I got an entry-level position, which meant you got a phone and a phone book. It was like, good luck. Hope you sell something. And it was not glamorous. And I was not making a lot of money. But I started to learn sales and marketing, and I enjoyed that. And that came out of my love for music, really, because I was like, oh, I'm working at a radio station, and I love music. And so it was this very off-kilter way of getting into learning sales and marketing. And I did that for about a decade. I did eventually become successful and make a decent living, and, you know, had the 401k, and everything was great. And what happened was that my husband and I were getting ready to get pregnant and start a family. And as we were talking about that, we felt very sure that we didn't want me to continue working like a full-time downtown in a cubicle, traffic both ways. I would never see our child, and we didn't want that.
Right.
And what I did not know was what I was going to do. And just through like a little bit of seeking and some coincidence, I ended up getting a job with a personal development company. And that was how I learned how to speak. I mean, I had no speaking experience. I certainly didn't see myself as a speaker or a Tony Robbins in any way. But they were like, well, we can train you to speak if you can like work on your own and be self-motivated. I had all those qualities from working in commission sales. Mm-hmm. And they taught me how to get up in front of groups and sell people into their workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really kind of how the seeds were born.
Mm-hmm.
What happened after that was that, you know, we had a very high risk pregnancy and a very high drama pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
I was racking up a lot of medical bills,
mm-hmm.
as I'm sure you know, Elena.
Yeah.
Here in the United States, that means, you know, you're paying, even if you have insurance,
going
to be paying out a lot of money if you go to the hospital, even for an aspirin, right?
Yes.
And we were going in for tests and scans and biopsies literally throughout the whole 9 months of our pregnancy. I was in the hospital for a week on bed rest. Our son was born early. He was in the neonatal intensive care unit. And after all of this ended, we had this huge stack of bills and a beautiful little baby boy. And I'm happy to say that he was healthy after being told he wasn't going to be. He was born healthy and happy, and all of that worked out fine. But here we were, new parents.
Mm-hmm.
This was in now going into 2009, the economy was in a complete tailspin.
Yes.
If you remember,
oh,
we all were like,
oh, trauma.
The sky is falling, right?
Yes.
We're all going to die.
Yeah. I'm like, trauma.
It was really a scary, very scary time.
Yeah.
My husband got laid off. He was working for a startup that got crumbled in this process.
Mm-hmm.
And so luckily he's very successful in what he does. So he got a job right away.
Mm-hmm.
But just that whole experience was so terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to sustain ourselves when everything felt, when the economy was so scary, it felt like anything could happen at any time and people could take your job away,
mm-hmm.
and take your paycheck away at any time. That's
mm-hmm.
how it felt to me, at least. And then I'm looking at this little baby boy and I just was really scared. I don't know
mm-hmm.
what other way to put it other than
mm-hmm.
I was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And as a mom, I now felt like,
responsible.
I'm going to do something about this. This is not okay. I got to take care of this baby boy. We need to. Great. My husband now has this job, but how am I also going to support and really solidify that we're safe financially?
And Kristen,
so for the,
I want to say this because there's a part that of the story that you haven't shared that I think that is so beautiful and so courageous. The doctor's telling you that you should not continue with the pregnancy. And
you
actually made that choice to say, like, no, we're going to continue.
That was one of the scariest and hardest things that we've been through besides like losing a parent or something was, you know, being pregnant and I was in my late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So we were not spring chickens by the time we got around to, you know, getting married and getting ready to have a baby. And we were told early on, you know, equivocation, you should not have this child. And literally no one said anything different. We talked to lots of different specialists. And it was a heart-wrenching time to have every doctor and nurse literally sitting you down, looking in the eye and saying, do not have this baby. Like, this is something really bad and it's going to be wrong with this child. And the reason why they were saying that was because there was like a fluid sac on the back of the baby's neck, and they were saying that this was indicative of any number of really horrible things, spina bifida, or things that would be really provide a very challenging life, yeah. Just to put some context around it. But as I said, we had kind of been through a lot just to like get pregnant, mm-hmm. and I was really sick during the first part. And we did a lot of prayer, a lot of soul searching. Mm-hmm. I don't propose to know what the right choice is for anybody else in mm-hmm. any given situation. But just for us with this child, we felt very sure that unless they could tell us, like, this child is going to have no quality of life,
right.
we just didn't see any reason not to go forward. And so with a lot of, again, it was a very tumultuous time, but that was our ultimate decision. And so we did go forward with the pregnancy through all that. And like I said, we were very lucky that our baby boy was born a little early. He had some jaundice, but essentially was totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of those moments in life where you think, wow, you know, it's maybe that rebel in me that comes out in other ways.
I love
my rebel. I always say my form of rebellion is not just to rebel to be like controversial or annoying to people, but it is very much around, you know, this is for each of us. This is your life, Elena, right? This is my life. My husband's life, our marriage, we have to ultimately decide, and especially in business, this comes up, like there is no straight path, like you so well put it at the beginning, and there's no sure thing other than whatever you're doing is not going to go perfectly. That we can all guarantee each other, right? No relationship,
amen, sister.
No business, no health, like there's no perfect path to anything.
Yeah.
So we all have to kind of take that self-responsibility and say, all right, and I'm going to steer this ship, you know, obviously in concert with everything else that's happening on other people and whatever higher power you believe in. And then there's sort of the choices that you are going to make through all of that you have to sleep well at night knowing you made the best choice for you given the information that you had at that time.
Right.
And that's what drove the choice with my son. It's what drove the choice to go. I have to go give a talk for myself and have my own business now. Because I can't sell this much, you know, sell 30,000 and keep 10% anymore. I have a little baby to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
I have a family I want to protect, and it's time for me to like do something I would never have ordinarily done, and you know, be a little braver than maybe I would have normally have been, and start really taking ownership for my financial independence. Mm-hmm. And that's really what drove me to go out and start giving talks, even though for me, it's the scary thing. I'm not a not nervous person. I'm a very nervous person. So people see me on stage and they think, oh, like you just are so great and you love it. And I couldn't do that. And it's like, no. I'm backstage with my knees knocking just like everybody else. I just choose to walk out there because I like what's waiting on the other side.
Right. And I think that you had one of the things that really struck me, I mean, and I interrupted you to bring this up because, I mean, that just, even just bringing it up, like, chokes me up. Like, that just really is, like, just so powerful. And it also, I think it illustrates your courage, you know? Like, even though you might say, like, well, I have to be a little braver, I think that, to me, like, the biggest bravery was in saying, like, no, like, we're moving forward and we're doing this no matter what, you know? And I think that every time that we take a step towards the thing that scares us the most, we get braver and braver and braver, you know, which I think it's so incredibly powerful, you know? And then the other piece that you said, which I loved, which is like, there's no guarantees, right? Like we have to decide that, you know, that whatever we're about to do, whether it's like having a kid or getting on stage or starting a business or whatever, that it's worth doing simply because we believe in it.
Yes.
You know, like,
and you really have to surrender to whatever the outcome is going to be. That's where, you know, a lack of attachment to the outcome mm-hmm. of something becomes really critical. Like mm-hmm. we couldn't just say in the situation of our son, Gavin, mm-hmm. well, we're going to go forward and he's going to be 100% healthy because we did not know that, right? We didn't know. We had to surrender to this is our choice and we're going to make right, you know, whatever comes of it. If he has a challenge, which was he was only given a 20% chance being born alive and well, to just be like as clear as I can be. It was 20% was what we were given for things to be okay. And so it wasn't, we know it's going to be okay. Right. It was, we surrender, we pray, he's going to be born healthy. He's going to have a life that he can enjoy and participate in. And maybe that means something is wrong with him, that he can still function, but it might not be. It might be that he has like a really major medical challenge, and we're gonna just be his parents, and we're gonna make right whatever comes our way. So there's like a really weird mix I find in life of like having to be that brave decision, mm-hmm. and also a certain sense of surrender that you're gonna kind of show up no matter what comes to you, because we can't control that part. We can just control our reaction to it, our response to it, to the best of our ability. And even that's likely going to be imperfect, right?
Totally. I love this, because you're actually talking about something that I talk often as a high performance psychologist. I talk about passionate detachment. And so a lot of my clients ask.
Oh, it has a name. Okay.
That's what I call it anyway. You know, my clients are like, well, what is that? I'm like, well, to me, passionate detachment is showing up like full out, like 120% full out, but then being completely detached from the outcome. You know, it's like you're jumping in with both feet, and then you're like, and then I will deal with whatever comes. You know, and I think that's like such a powerful, like when we can really step into that, I think is when we can really unlock our potential to get into the flow. You know, I talk a lot about being in flow, and you know, I've been somebody that's been kind of obsessed with trying to figure out how you can control flow, and you can't control flow, but there's lots of things that you can do to prepare yourself to get into it. You know, and passionate detachment is one of those pieces of like really putting 100% of your passion and effort and then like letting go and knowing that even if you fail, right? Because I think a lot of times we ask the question, like, what would you do if you knew that you couldn't fail? Which I think it's a great question, you know, but I think that an even better question for me is like, what would you do even if you fail?
Yes.
Right.
I love that. At my live event, that's actually on one of my slides. I am to God. I promise you it is.
And I haven't been there, I promise.
I know, she hasn't been to my event. She hasn't seen my slides, and I didn't know she was going to say that. But literally, it's that. It's exactly that. It's great if you can't fail, but what would you be willing to do and fail at it?
Yeah.
Because in business, in speaking, in relationships, like, that actually is such a more powerful question. What are you willing to like walk through a little fire for? Because that's actually a much more realistic view of how it's probably going to go, you know? And I love that passionate detachment. I wrote that down. I'm going to quote you on that because that perfectly describes. You were reminding me of being a kid. I horseback rode fairly competitively as a kid. And I really think that was the key to how I became successful. I wasn't a very naturally good horseback rider either. All that fear that I had speaking was right there with me on a horse. I'm like, I'm going to die. That was my catchphrase. I'm going to die. But so they nicknamed me the chicken. Literally, my trainer would be like, here comes the chicken. And
so
with love, you know, very loving. But I really, what I liked about it was, maybe it's also kind of speaking, it's not really a team sport, and it's not really about beating other people, right? Mm-hmm. Like in teams, like we're going to crush the eagles or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Horseback riding to me felt very like, I'm going to do my personal best.
Yeah.
I'm going to like clearly focus my mind on my form and doing this course correctly. And then like you either win or you don't win, but it's not like you can't beat somebody else because no one else is in the ring with you, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? So to me, it's very, that same focus of like, how do I be my very best? And then I got to let go of what happens because I don't control the rest.
Totally. And it's funny that you're talking about this because I've worked with a ton of athletes throughout my life. My background was, I was a ballerina.
Okay,
so that's how I got into high performance and, you know, got obsessed in that. And that's part of the reason why I still do aerial dance. And so people ask me now, like, why do you, and I'm like, well, I'm actually afraid of heights. And they're like, how do you do aerial dance when you're afraid of heights? And I'm like, well, because there's this piece about that when you do something that's kind of scary and
yes.
it's also a challenge, that it's
yes.
part of what contributes to getting into flow. So you talked about being really focused on, you know, some when people ask me what's flow, I talk about flow, it's relaxed attention. Like it's focused attention that is like, you know, that relaxed focus. Because
yes.
you can't force it, but you have
yes.
to be super present, right?
It's tricky.
The moment.
It's so tricky. Yes.
And it's the same thing in speaking, which is kind of funny because it's not surprising that like I started working with athletes and then actually speakers were coming to me because they're like, oh, I'm
yes.
terrified of getting up to the microphone. I'm terrified of getting
yes.
the recognition, blah, 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 you know? But I think that there's lots of people talk about being fearless. And while I like the idea of it, I don't think that happens, you know? So I don't ever talk about being fearless. I talk about embracing fear because
yes.
like, fear is going to be there, you know, kind of like what you were saying. It's not that I'm not nervous. Like you
yeah.
are, you're just kind of putting fear on the back seat and then you're like, and I'm taking the wheel and fear will come along,
yes.
with, but I'm still moving forward.
Yes. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm very upfront because I think it's not helpful for people to imagine what's not true, but also it's just not helpful for them to imagine that I'm going up on stage or even just doing a show like this or doing a little webinar that I just have no nerves and everything just comes to me because that's just fundamentally not true. Now, I don't know, maybe someone else is fearless. I don't have that experience. I have personally never had that experience when I'm stretching. I always say I try to stay away from like pure terror. Like
right.
that's maybe
yeah.
not healthy. So I've done it to myself, but I've learned over the years that's maybe a little too much. I did zip lining. I don't know
uh-huh.
if you've ever been zip lining.
Uh-uh.
Oh, okay.
It's terrifying.
It was
yeah.
terrifying. And then people were like, but by the end you liked it. I'm like, no. By the end, I was terrified.
Well, I'm glad that you're saying that because yeah, that pretty much
you do like because you don't just do one thing. Like you go, you have to keep going.
Yeah.
You do like 10 different runs or whatever
yeah.
it is. And I'm telling you, just for me, it did not really ever get better. It was always terrifying, and I don't know if I'll ever do it again. But I did it. But my point is that maybe there are brave souls. They don't experience fear. I find that, you know, really the kinds of people that I like working with, and maybe you find the same thing, like there is an element of fear. Fear is actually a healthy thing that's
mm-hmm.
telling us to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving you some adrenaline to accomplish something. So my goal with my clients and even for myself is not like, how do we not feel fear? It's actually just, I like to say, can we just get it to a place where it's manageable?
Mm-hmm.
Because we want you and I want myself. I want to be able to still function in the scenario. I don't want to be overwhelmed and completely shut down. That's not good for anybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if we can just keep it to a manageable level where I can feel it and go, wow, I'm pretty nervous right now. I might do some things to manage my nerves and then I can still function. Excuse me. Then it's all good. So it's
Absolutely.
Not about erasing it or not feeling it, but just getting it to a place where you can still do what you need to do, right?
Yeah, and I think it's a process of iteration because, you know, like if you have 10,000 people, right?
Yeah.
It'd be a little bit like, oh my gosh, right? But if you're like, okay, I'm going to go give a talk to 5 people, you know, and then you
yeah.
give a talk to 5 people and then you're like, okay, I was super nervous, but it was like, okay. And then I'm going to do one for 10 and then 20, like, you know, so like you start kind of, I bet you that if you had started zip lining and did a small zip line and then you kept doing zip lines,
maybe yeah.
over time, right, it would feel like
if I hadn't have been hurled across the forest, it might have been a better
exactly. but that's exactly what you're saying of making it manageable, because I think that
yeah.
if we make that leap too big, and you know, it's kind of funny, just I'm kind of thinking a little bit at Csikszentmihalyi is kind of the guy that is he's called the father of like flow. He did all his research on flow. And so he talked about like the, what needs to happen for flow to occur is that there needs to, a challenge needs to meet your skill level. So when you have a high skill level and a high challenge, then you are able, like you feel stretched and challenged, but you're able to meet it. Then you can get into flow.
Yeah.
But if your challenge is really high and your skill level is low, that creates a lot of anxiety, right?
Yeah.
And then that's totally like antithetical to flow. And so when you're saying like, yeah, I don't want to be overwhelmed. I want to keep it manageable, you know, and I'm going to guess knowing what you do that you're taking your students in this journey, right? Where it's like a step by step where they're stretching, but they're stretching a little bit each time.
Yeah.
So that they're not just being like pushed over the
yeah. The for sure. I mean, and then sometimes it's funny you're reminding me. So my very first talk for my ever, like in front of people where I was gonna make an offer and I was selling people into the workshop with the personal development company, that was to 8 people.
Uh-huh.
So you can count it on 2 fingers, 8 people. And I was so scared. I sat in the parking lot. I got there like an hour early, which is pretty typical. And I got a Starbucks and I was just sitting in my car. You know, ideally I would have been rehearsing what I was going to say, but I was just being completely overtaken by terror.
Oh, no.
And I was very seriously considering leaving. Like I was just going to drive away. And then like the angel on my shoulder, the devil was like, screw these people, I'm out of here. Like, why are you doing this to yourself? This is crazy. You're going to throw up on them. Like, just go home. And then the angel, you know, was like, Kristen, you're a decent human being. Like, there's a guy up there who arranged for you to speak to this group today. You know, you're just going to leave them without a speaker? Like, you don't treat people that way, you know? And then the devil's like, forget it. All right, go home. Long story long, I finally just, my conscience overrode my utter fear, and I made myself go up there and give this to 8 people. Now, flash forward, years later, I've got a lot more experience, and lots of track record, and I have a coaching client, and she has never made an offer and sold from a stage before. She sells software that is used by like network marketers and things like that, just to follow-up systems and things like that. And so we prepare her for this talk. Well, it was to 1,600 people, 1,600 people at like this huge 3-day event.
Wow.
And everything went wrong. You know, she was like the last speaker on the last day and the slides weren't working and everything was going wrong. Now, to the 8 people, I will say, I sold 3 workshop tickets. So I was pretty excited.
Yeah.
Like, I actually got a sale and I didn't throw up on anything.
That's a bonus.
It was pretty awesome. Now Jen, my client Jen, got up and she was scared and everything was kind of going wrong around her. She ended up selling over $16,000 in recurring monthly income. Now, what I will say is that is an abnormal first talk, right? Mine is a much more normal first talk. But, you know, she properly prepared. She chose that opportunity. I wasn't like shoving her out on the stage. That would be obviously horrible advice. But it was like she for whatever reason, she really felt called to speak at this event because it was a great fit for her. So in a way, like the situation kind of outmatched her experience on one hand. On another, she kind of felt up for it, you know, emotionally. We did a lot of preparation for that event so that she had a good strategy and a good plan. So, you know, it was an interesting mix, but I always chuckle at how my students so far exceeded my own, you know, first talk. Like, I always tell it as a story of, like, you know, I am the best person to teach you because I could barely manage to feed the 8 people. And I figured out, you know, how to make a great living from it.
Like, well, Jen, but there's a difference there, though. Like, the difference there was that she had you.
That's true.
You didn't have anybody else. She had you, and she had your structure, and she had your support, and she had you cheering her on, which I'm guessing you didn't have that. So
I did have a coach, you know, the company I worked for would kind of train you, but it was definitely different but also just goes to show you, and I believe it's part of why I'm really called to do this work, is that I'm not a natural, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not fearless. And so all of that angst that I was feeling about talking to eight people, you know, it allowed me to develop strategies over time on how to make speaking more comfortable, how to make it not really feel pushy or salesy, some of the things that I didn't like about working for the personal development company. You know, I really figured out how to make all that work, and because I'm not stupid, but I'm also not a brain surgeon, right? So everything I do is very simple. It's very easy for people to kind of put into action. And so those are definitely the advantages that I am able to give mm-hmm. my clients for sure. And I think that's the good part about maybe something not being so natural that you can't explain how to do it to somebody else. Right.
Which yeah. I think it's fascinating because it was something that I noticed, you know, many, many years ago when I was teaching dance, I noticed that, the teachers that were naturally gifted at mm-hmm. dancers weren't very good teachers. And, you know, I was a good dancer, but things didn't come naturally. Like I had to work through a lot of things and figure stuff, which made me a better teacher just because I knew how to work with all the problems, you know, which I think is kind of the same thing that you're saying, right? Like you've had to work through all of the anxiety and not having this come naturally to you and, you know, and make it work for you, which I think will make it that much easier for the people that you're working with.
Absolutely.
So, Kristen, you said something, and I'm going to want to come back to this in a minute, but you've said a couple of things that I want to really ask this question is, you know, you talked a little bit about prayer when you were pregnant, and you kind of talked about kind of having a sense of things happening in a particular way and, you know, kind of having your angel, like, you know, things have been orchestrated for you to be here. And so I'm kind of curious if you would be willing to share basically how you've integrated like your intuition and your spirituality into how you run your business and how you make decisions. It's something that I'm super jazzed about. I think it's something that is like a superpower that we all have, but I don't think that many people talk about it. And so I'm wondering if you would be willing to share with us a little bit about how that's for you.
Yeah. And I think there've been times when I've done a better and worse job of it. There's certainly for me, my natural tendency is to get in my head and to push and just to drive. And so in the beginning of my business, I definitely did that a lot, and it helps in your business. Mm-hmm. That can be an asset to really drive and be willing to just get into action mm-hmm. is a great thing. One thing that's always been really strong my whole life is I do have a pretty strong feeling around ethics. I don't know if that's 100% the right word, but I have a very clear sense of like what I'm okay doing and not okay doing. And that's going to be individual for each one of us. That's one thing that I've always put at the forefront of my business, though, is like a very clear definition of like at what cost, or, you know, what am I willing to do or not do for money? Maybe we'll just put it that way. Yeah. What am I willing to do or not do to grow my business?
Love that.
That I've always had really clear lines on, and I think that is an important boundary to draw for yourself in your business. It makes some decisions just really clear, who you will or won't do business with, where you would or wouldn't want to speak, who you would or wouldn't want to partner with, who you do want to bring on even as a client. Mm-hmm. It makes your decisions a lot easier if you kind of know what feels right and good to you and where and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's that. And then I think over the years I've gotten better, hopefully. It's been certainly something I've been working on over the past 2 years, is then bringing in more of a sense of quiet and intuition. For me, what that meant was spending and creating time in my day, usually at the beginning of the day, for me, that's a little quiet. So I don't take appointments or meetings, for instance, like at 8 a.m, which is when my day starts. I get my son off to school. I'm back at my house by about 8:00. And so I don't do meetings at that hour. I try to keep that clear. And that is for me to get centered and get quiet, maybe do a little meditation, which I'm not great at because I'm a little brain, but I'll do it anyways. I sit quietly and just give myself time to be centered and grounded. Mm-hmm. And if I start my day that way, look at my goals and from a quiet place say, what are the actions I need to take today to go towards that goal? I make much better decisions than hitting the ground in a like whirling dervish, which would be something that I'm fairly prone to do. Again, you know, I know my tendency is I'm going to go up in my head, I'm going to push, and I'm going to like drive, and I'm going to start spinning my wheels. And I get very spazzy, that nervous energy that I have very naturally that we've been talking about can really play into me making just like a lot of fast decisions and working a lot and not necessarily being that productive or in the flow. And so for me to kind of counteract that, it means very consciously building time into my day to be quiet and to start the day off not in that energy, to remind myself, you want to drive and we're going to funnel that energy, but in a calmer and more thoughtful.
Oh no. Something is up in the with the connection. And so I'm gonna guess that it's gonna come here in any minute. And I there you are.
We're back.
I was saying something.
Sorry.
I was just saying that something happened with the internet, so that we were gonna slow down. And so you were saying, starting with a quiet energy, a quiet space to be able to funnel the energy. That's the last thing.
To channel the energy more thoughtfully. Mm-hmm. So having a drive is a good thing. But if you turn the hose on full volume and just start spraying that drive everywhere, which is what my tendency might be, is that I'm going to get worn out. I might get sick. And I usually will end up doing more work than what's necessary, right? Because I'm not really being thoughtful and being more anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I take time and build that morning ritual in where I can maybe go for a walk outside, do a little meditation, have a little space in my day to quiet and ground myself, then I can be very thoughtful about, okay, let's channel that energy in this one direction.
Mm-hmm.
In business especially, mm-hmm. at least for me, because I've built my business part-time and really having time to be there for my son, I'm always looking for the biggest bang for the least amount of time mm-hmm. and energy mm-hmm. so that I'm very successful and I'm doing good at growing my business and serving my clients in a big way, and I still have time to do all these other things, like be a good mom and a good wife and take care of my health. So a good way to do that is to be really kind of single-minded in your decisions. Like for a business person, really simple thing is like, how do I just get in front of more people?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make my one offer to more people? Yeah. Is a really simple, singular focus that you can have. And so prayer, meditation, grounding, those are all important ways to keep that focus really clear mm-hmm. and keep your energy clear.
Mm-hmm.
I also, in my speaking, like to have just some rituals before I go on stage to get really grounded, get quiet. I usually say a prayer backstage,
mm-hmm.
you know, that my goal is to help at least one person in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, my goal is to do the greatest good. I don't know what that is, but whatever the greatest good for the room is, mm-hmm. that will come through in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps with those nerves that we talked about, that my focus then is not on when I step on stage. My focus is 100% on serving the greatest number of people in the room in the highest way possible, and that somehow that'll come through. And if I have that focus, then I can be excited that I'm going to be as surprised as everybody else as to what that is, but I'm not worried about me or how I look or how I sound.
Oh my God, you have just shared so many huge pieces of gold nuggets, and so I just want to like pull some of those because I think that you just shared so much. A, it's like, are you sure that we're not sisters in some other lives? Because seriously, you're like, my tendency is to do blah blah blah, and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Anyway, but what you said is the piece of self-awareness. I mean, you didn't say it that way, but I think that is so big. You said, I have a tendency to get in my head and to get super spazzy and then start into action and do all the stuff, which is kind of what I'm saying. Like, are you serious? We're not.
Because
that's me too. But if you don't know that about you, then how can you learn to manage that energy? How can you start adjusting?
Yeah.
You can't, right? So that you've gotten to recognize what is your natural tendency, and then to actually clear out some space. Like you talked, I love the importance of getting quiet and meditation. I'm a huge fan of meditation. All my clients always say, like, you always have a way to bring it back to meditation. And I'm like, well, because meditation is so powerful. And
yeah.
But you talked about making space for you and directing your attention in a super intentional way, which I think it's one of our biggest problems, like, happening in our world now. It's like there is so much going on, so much distraction, that people are hardly ever really super present and hardly ever really intentional. And so then that obviously not only shows up in our relationships and our families, but in our businesses as well. Because then it's like, you know, you said it's like you grab the hose and you start spraying. I love that. I love that image, right?
Yeah.
And then it doesn't, and then you don't really know, like, when something works, then you don't actually really know what works and what doesn't work, because it's sort of like, you know.
And I think there's signs, you know, when you're saying the self-awareness, I think it's helpful to say maybe that the way I got self-aware, and likely if someone out there is not aware at this moment, how it shows up is in pain, you know, in a problem, which for me is like, I just get very uncomfortable and I'm edgy and I feel anxious and I feel like I'm spinning my wheels. And I know, but I didn't know before, you're right. But I knew something wasn't right. I didn't feel that great. And my results, you know, I felt like I was working really hard. My results weren't that great. So if you're feeling pain in some way, or like you're just not quite getting the results that you want in your life, or your mind, you know, is feeling uncomfortable, which is how I felt, like, gee, I cannot shut my mind up, you know, those are the signs of like, wait a minute, right? You probably have more clarity on that than I do, but
I think it's always helpful to hear it from different people. I love that you talk about having a process before you get on stage, because I always talk up to people, help people get what I call them as pre-performance routines, you know, like create a routine before you actually are going to go perform. And we perform in all kinds of ways, you know, it could be stage, it could be, you know, giving a presentation at work, it could be, you know, doing a radio show, like it's all kinds of different ways in which that can show up. But what I really, really loved, and I really want to highlight this, is that you said, I set an intention that I want to impact at least one person and do the greatest good for the people that are there. And whether you actually do this intentionally or not, that is actually what's contributing to you being able to practice passionate attachment.
Yes,
because
for sure.
You are setting the intention on showing up fully to make an impact, but you're not saying like, I need to enroll this many people, I need to sell this many, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're just like, you know, you're not making it about you. You're making it about the impact that you want to have, which I think contributes to being able to really, you show up as you, which I love.
Yeah, I definitely, it came out of a lot of practice. And again, figuring out like, how do I do this in a way that feels ethical and comfortable and gets the best results? And what I found that works for me, and I definitely recommend my clients do, is let's set goals for sure. We're in a coaching session. We're going to say there's about this many people that are going to be in the audience. We're going to shoot for this many sales at this price point. We'll generate around this much money, this many clients. We can figure out all those mathematics, and that's a good exercise to do before you're in the room.
Right.
But if that's your focus, like if I'm on behind the curtain peeking out and going like, I'm going to sell that person, that's totally the wrong focus when we're delivering the talk. That's the wrong energy and that's the wrong intention. So it's okay that if you want your talk to grow your business or whatever goal you're setting, you want to win a blue ribbon in a competition, that's fine. You can set that goal ahead of time and know that's your intention and crunch the numbers and all of that good stuff. Then the moment of, though, that's when we have to say, well, what creates the best fill in the blank for my clients? Well, what's the best talk
Right.
Well, the best talk connects with the audience. So it's not about you. If you give a talk about you making money, that's not going to, you know, hello, everybody. I would like to get 20 clients today. That's not, we know that's not going to work. So the best talk is one that entertains the audience, it serves them, it connects with them. It gives them hopefully some new awareness. They learn something new and maybe at best make a decision to do something different depending upon the topic of the talk. Mm-hmm. They're going to improve their finances or their health or their business or their marriage. And so that is completely focused on the audience. Mm-hmm. And so yes, set your goals. And then yeah, in the day of that shift, completely shifts off of you and onto your audience.
Mm-hmm. Which I think that that's really, really powerful. I mean, you kind of said it just like, and then I just, you know, but I think.
Yeah.
So I know that we're, you know, kind of coming towards the last part of our show. Before we keep going, I really wanted to give out your website, because you have these like three amazing gifts where you
yes.
are giving away basically how to create your talk template.
Yeah.
You have this, I love, and we can talk about it or not, I'll let you decide, this brand personality blueprint where people
yes.
get to choose kind of where they fall and then how they can build their brand based on that personality, which, and I've studied lots of personality systems and I really, really loved yours. And then you kind of have like a little template of like how they create like the revenue pathway or something like that. So
yeah.
People can get that at www.speakingreallyworks.com/class. Speakingreallyworks.com/class. And we'll give it away before we end, but I wanted to give an opportunity now just in case people had to walk away or anything.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And people will love that gift set because it's fairly robust. So they're going to get some good training and some good templates, and they'll actually get a full training with me as well.
Cool.
So there's a lot of goodies in there. But the brand personality blueprint that you mentioned is often where I start with new clients, because it's also very often the thing that's missing from somebody's message or their business that I have found over the years, again, as I was kind of fumbling my own way through this, you know, that oftentimes when we start a business or we want to get up in front of people, we want to lead a show like you, a radio show, we don't always realize it consciously, but we very often strip away our natural personality. And we also particularly like to strip away our quirks, like the things that are a little bit weird or different or things that maybe even rub people the wrong way mm-hmm. a little. And the reality that I have found is that in squashing that, you kind of squash other things too. You know, it's like they always say, if you turn off one thing, you accidentally turn off other parts of yourself.
Yeah.
So when I first started speaking, I was like very robotic in a way. Like it was good. It would be a good talk, but it was very, you know, I used my dorky white person voice. You know, it's like it was very professional and I looked very professional and I did not make any jokes. It was probably like technically good.
Right.
And yes, I would make some sales. And then what happened was this one day, like my guard was down, maybe I was a little tired or I don't know what. And I like said the thing that I would normally have thought and gone, keep that to yourself. Cause you know, we're friends on Facebook. Like, you know, like I say zingers, I kind of like to be funny, you know, and I have a quirky sense of humor and I'm very self-deprecating. And all of that had been shut off. But this one day, the whatever weird thought I had came out of my mouth and the whole room erupted in laughter and it just completely changed the energy in the room. And I was like, what is happening right now? And it was stark. I mean, it was enough that when I got in my car afterwards, I was like, whoa, like that was scary. Number one, like I was setting the thing. Like I let loose and that felt scary. Honestly, it was like, wow, okay, that was real. But the thing was that the way that the audience responded was also very real and was also at a level that hadn't quite happened before.
Mm.
And that was the most remarkable thing, was realizing, wow, like this thing that I thought was going to destroy my credibility, you know, or make people not like me, just lit up the room in a way that I haven't done before. So what would happen if I just did that all the time? And that was sort of the beginning for me. And now I help people through the brand personality blueprint figure out in a more systematic way, well, what is kind of your true anchor point? Like, we all have lots of facets to our personality,
right.
Number one.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the one you lead with in your business? And if we can kind of wrap everything up in that personality, like the way you might name a talk or a program or how you dress, if we can show people who you are, who you really are all the time, you're going to attract better opportunities for you. The kinds of clients you attract are going to be more in alignment with you, mm-hmm. like a better fit. And you're going to have more fun and be more energized because you're not putting energy into trying to be the person you think you ought to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which takes, you don't realize it, but you're putting energy. Like, I was putting energy in, don't tell the joke. Don't say the singer. That was actually taking up bandwidth.
Totally.
But when I let
oh,
it
yeah.
go, I'm just like, I can look at you, Elena, and just put my energy into you because I'm not trying to monitor me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's so powerful.
Yes. And the brand personality blueprint, the reason why, possibly why you really like it, is that, those archetypes are really from Jungian psychology.
Yeah.
So I'm always very clear. Like, I didn't make up the archetypes. It's Jung, Carl Jung, you can look them up. But he says, we have these 12, kind of all people
yes.
have these 12 archetypal personality styles.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can articulate them clearly, it just helps people relate to us more quickly and more easily. So when you download the blueprint, when you go get the gift, for those of you listening and you look at it, please know, like, you have all 12 of those pieces inside
mm-hmm.
of us.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a creative side.
Yes.
And we all have kind of a caretaking
mm-hmm.
side. So yes, we all have lots of facets, but Elena, you lead with one probably in your business. I definitely lead with one in my business. And so getting clear on what that is, it's not about turning the other pieces off, but it's just about if I can show people who I am truly, everything is going to be easier for you and for your clients. And it's a lot of fun, and it makes those decisions, kind of like we said earlier with meditation, when we get really clear, it's easy to decide what name to use or not use because it either fits with you or it doesn't, and you'll know very quickly, or what color does or doesn't fit, or what font does or doesn't fit. All your decisions about how you're going to show up are way faster and easier because you're kind of putting it through the lens of you.
Totally. And, yes, I loved it because I do a lot of work with archetypes and Jung does say we each have 12. And so I help people identify what are their 12 and how they work and that kind of stuff. so I love that. But what I loved about yours particularly was that I had done obviously a lot of things, and I love Sally Hogshead's.
Yeah.
What I really loved about yours was that not only did you describe the different personalities, but then you went and matched it with sort of like colors and like how you might dress or the music that you might play.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to cough, so I'm going to let you talk for a moment.
Okay, I'll talk you cough. So, when you download the blueprint, you'll not only see kind of how to get clear on what yours might be, but I've created a template for each of the 12 to give you ideas. And I'm also very clear, like, please don't be like, well, I can't wear that outfit. It's not like a rule. I'm not saying you have to wear these colors and you have to now dress in this particular way, but to kind of give you examples and give you a direction you might head in, and then know that, like, the rebel is one of them, and I definitely kind of lead with that rebel, which what we talked about in the beginning of this conversation. But my rebel is going to look different than somebody else's rebel.
Mm-hmm.
I have a client who's a rebel, but hers is more like a motorcycle Harley riding rebel.
Yep.
And I'm more like a rock and roll ish rebel, and someone else might look like, I don't know what, a Native American warrior rebel. Like, there's no rules, right? Because these archetypes are not meant to confine you. It's meant to go, oh, I get how I can express who I actually am. So please know that the templates we set for you, they're really fun to look at. I think all of them are really beautiful. My designer did a great job bringing them to life, but they're just a point of inspiration for you to then say, how does that feel for me, or how would that look for me? But yeah, yeah. There's fonts and colors and outfit examples, and also other brands, which I think is really fun. So you can look at other brands that share your archetype and see how they express it. And you'll see how weirdly individual, like you can share the same archetype with someone or another company, and yet it's still going to have your fingerprint or your soul print on it, just because it's going to come through you.
Totally, totally. And I just have to say, I mean, I really, really loved it, because I remember that before I downloaded it, I was kind of in this place of like, you know, I was like, I'm definitely a rebel. There's a rebel side to me, but I'm not like the rocker, you know, type of rebel, you know. But there's also this very mystical kind of, you know, fairy-ish side to me, you know. And so when I got yours, and I was like, oh, like it's like between the magician and the rebel, and it was definitely like I have a stronger magician, you know. And so.
You're a magician rebel.
Yeah, I am. So I kind of call myself like a divine rebel, you know, and I think that there's like people that are like in that, you know. And so it was really cool to be able to have that like, oh, and then ground into something, and then from there evolve. So I want to give that website one more time before we end, because I really like, I can't say enough, like it's go and get it. It's like so fun and fun to do. And as you can tell, Kristen's really fun and awesome to learn from. So the website is speakingreallyworks.com/class. So Kristen, we have about 3 minutes. And so I want to ask you, what is the last kind of bit of inspiration or last words that you want to leave our audience with?
Oh, so hard. I would say, you know, don't be afraid to be yourself in your life, in your business. And I feel like really that's my calling. I've always been the square peg personally, as a redheaded, super fair skinned, freckled faced, you know, New Jersey accent girl who was dropped in Southern California as a child. The land of the tall, tan, and blonde. I've just always been a little bit of a misfit. And so I really feel this calling as part of my work is just to encourage everybody listening, as I encourage myself every day, is bring you forward and really fully accept who you are, and in your life and in your business and in your relationships, if you can bring that forward in a spirit of service to other people, I think we can be pretty amazed at what can happen. All of the things in my own life that are my biggest quirks, the things that I feared the most to share with people, my weird sense of humor or my weird sense of style and my big mouth and I talk too much, all of these things are really a magical part of my business now. Yeah. They allow me to help more people in a really amazing way that I'm humbled to do. And so, you know, I guess my challenge and my call to everybody listening is, you know, how can you bring your true self forward without having to fix anything or change anything? Just bringing your true self forward and seeing how that can be a gift to people. That you don't need to, you know, disavow or turn down any part of yourself. You can bring it all forward and know that it'll be a gift to people, whether it's in your relationships or in your business, it's for you to give.
I love it. I love it. I think that that's the best message. I have this little quote that I'm just going to share that solidifies your message. And it says, have only one rule. Be your wild, courageous, and brilliant self every single day, no matter what.
Yay! I love it.
Kristen, it's been such a delight to have you. Those of you that are listening, if you guys want to get at the video version of this and actually get to see Kristen and I, you can do that at intuitivebusinessmastery.com/radio. And I will see you in a few weeks. I am just really, really delighted that you got to be here with me, Kristen. It was such an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you.
Until then, defy the ordinary, become extraordinary. Dr. Elaine Astadel and Kristen Thompson signing off.
Coach on Fire Radio.